From Redeemer Broadcasting, this is Holding All Things Together for the second weekend in November. I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter. Education departments in many states seem to be on radical autopilot when they make social studies standards. In Alaska, instead of teaching standard American history, the children are expected to be taught action civics and protest civics. They focus on identity politics and teaching indigenous peoples' history, to the exclusion of our nation's story. The radicals in charge of the standards of what is taught seem to have no appreciation for our true history. Here to discuss this disturbing trend is Jerry Newcomb.
I described a specific example that was reported out of the state of Alaska, where in the social studies standards, they're removing the requirement that children learn about some basics in our history, even people such as George Washington or Abraham Lincoln, and then even about Christianity. You really cannot understand the history of America and not understand all three of those things. And then, of course, you know, Christopher Columbus, they've removed him. And
also ahead, Pastor Bill Shisko continues looking at the shorter catechism. And this week, he focuses on God's command not to murder. Later in the program, Reverend Jerry Wiss directs our attention to our constitutional rights and how our Constitution is not based merely on rules and government inclinations, which often change, but rather it is based on the steadfastness of God and the fact that when it is God-given, it does not change over time. Finally, we'll take another look at this week in history. All this just ahead on Holding All Things Together.
We're dealing with the moral law as we go through the form of sound doctrine called the Westminster Shorter Catechism. And incidentally, we're following the pattern that the early church did. Now, the early church in its catechisms, its teaching, spoke about the way of life or the rule of duty. And they would open up the moral law the way we're doing here. And we're in the sixth commandment. The sixth commandment is, you shall not kill. And number 69 in the Shorter Catechism says, what's forbidden in the sixth commandment? It forbids the taking away of our own life or the life of our neighbor unjustly or whatsoever tends thereunto. Our society, assassinations of public figures. I live right outside of New York City where every day there are stabbings and murderings and shootings, and right now, whole cities are war zones where we have to discuss whether it's necessary to have the National Guard to come in to preserve order in our cities. And friends, the problem is not guns or knives, it's the human heart. Jesus in Matthew 5 and verse 21 speaks about hatred that is really the heart of all murder. So what does the Sixth Commandment prohibit? Well, it's not prohibiting legitimate self-defense. To defend yourself personally, to defend your home, is certainly legitimate and necessary, and perhaps increasingly required in our lawless culture. It does mean that we are to beware of the hatred of others that leads to murder, whether it be hatred of people because of race, or because of their religion, or because of their gender. Each person you deal with is made in the image of God, and you treat them as such. That's why in Genesis 9, the commandment, whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man. That's why murder is such an atrocious sin. And it also is why, in the name of God, the death penalty can be meted out. Bottom line in all of this, though, cultivate love toward others How can I give myself for the good of others and the good of myself? That's kind of the heart of the command, you shall not murder.
On the Zoom line with us today is Dr. Jerry Newcomb. Jerry serves as executive director of the Providence Forum, a division of D. James Kennedy Ministries. He serves as senior producer and on-air contributor. Jerry, you have a lot of experience doing all that stuff, so thank you for joining us today.
Sure. Thank you.
You recently wrote an article titled Historical Icons They're Removing from Our Kids' Education. Can you describe to our listeners what's going on here?
Well, I described a specific example that was reported out of the state of Alaska, where in the social studies standards, they're removing the requirement that children learn about some basics in our history, even people such as George Washington or Abraham Lincoln, and then even about Christianity. You really cannot understand the history of America and not understand all three of those things.
Yes.
And then, of course, you know, Christopher Columbus, they've removed him and so forth. You know, so basically, unfortunately, the children are getting a politically correct version of history, but not a historically correct one.
No. I was reading your article and I thought, you know, this highlights too the importance of our family, parents and grandparents, how they can provide the connection to our past. And, you know, not only the George Washington, Abraham Lincoln Christianity, but especially the Christianity. You know, where did your family come from? What's important to your family? And that sort of thing. And when we have our roots ripped out from us, we become a confused people, it seems.
Absolutely. And in fact, one of the tactics, frankly, of the communists, and we've seen this in different times in the 20th century when they created such monstrosities as the Soviet Union or Mao's China.
Yes.
The remnants of these things are still with us.
Oh, very much so.
Very much so. And but what they one of the things they did was they ripped the people away from their own history. And that's
right.
Happened even in America, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting, Dan, when I think about my dad, who was a poor farm boy growing up in Minnesota, and he went to a one-room schoolhouse, lived in a farm, you know, community or whatever, about an hour south of Minneapolis and St. Paul. And the education that he had at that one-room schoolhouse, you know, in the early 20s and early 30s and so forth, in the late 20s and so forth, early 30s, was superior, honestly.
It was.
To probably 90% or more of the education that children are getting today.
Absolutely.
And I remember my wife is from Norway. And when we were first starting to date, we were going to Wheaton Graduate School, Wheaton, Illinois, and it was just fantastic that we met. We've been married now, by God's grace, for 45 years.
Praise God.
But I remember one time, one of the first times I brought her into the city of Chicago, we were driving, and there was this huge building and complex of buildings and smokestack and all this kind of stuff. And she said, "What is that, a factory?" And I said, "Oh, no, that's a high school."
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
But there's something that's been lost in the education. So we have a lot of people, if I could use a phrase from Rush Limbaugh, the old famous Rush Limbaugh used a phrase, young skulls full of mush. But the phrase,
it's true.
The phrase kind of fits. And, you know, I think part of the reason why Charlie Kirk has resonated among so many people, and unfortunately the murder of Charlie Kirk, but the fact that he was out there trying to communicate to young people,
right.
He was communicating to young people, trying to help them to understand the Christian tradition, Christianity in general, but also the greatness of America and why our freedoms are so important and so forth. And so I think that he realized and recognized, you know, America is not a happy accident, to use a phrase that,
right.
You know, has been used by others as well. But the idea of it is that it's specific Christian ideas that help create the freedoms we enjoy. And all told, people love to have these freedoms, even if they sometimes abuse them. But as Paul Jaley of the Plymouth Rock Foundation once says, Americans love the roots of the Christianity that produced, you know, America, but they don't like the root of it. But you can't really have the fruit, and it won't last forever, can't be sustained forever if you remove the root.
That's right. Well, today we're talking with Dr. Jerry Newcomb, and we're discussing how important our history is to us and how some educators feel it their obligation to rip that history from us. Names like Christopher Columbus, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, words like Christianity, Protestantism, Catholicism, and really understanding our roots. And Jerry, let's keep going. What I really want to shoot for towards the end of our discussion, I'll just give a quick heads up, is as we consider what these miserable educators are doing to our children, what is the solution? If we have a Christian parent that wants to educate their children, see that they're taken care of. I mean, even as I'm recording this, we're recording this right now, Jerry, my wife is upstairs with six of our 13 grandchildren, six, and she is picking up some homeschooling work for our daughter and daughter-in-law and trying to train the children. And it's so efficient. You know, you got one-on-one attention, and if the child has a problem, you correct it right away. And I don't know, it just makes an awful lot of sense to me what I see going on upstairs.
Yes, and I would agree with you, and I think that's a huge part of the solution. You know, frankly, Dan, when a lot of the early Americans were being educated, they were educated in a very home-friendly type of environment.
Yeah.
You know, Abraham Lincoln, for example, learned a lot about the law from getting a used copy of Sir William Blackstone's Commentaries on the Laws of England. That was a book, a four-volume series of books by a British jurist on the laws of England, but it was extremely influential in America. And some of the phraseology you find in Blackstone works its way into some of the writings of our founding fathers.
Yeah.
And for example, when Jefferson says in the Declaration of Independence, according to the laws of nature and of nature's God, this is a Blackstonian type phrase, referring to natural law and so forth. But a lot of those early Americans were taught at home, and it made a big difference. And then late other times, you know, it was through church type schools and so forth. Part of the whole problem is we've removed God from the education. And yet the Bible says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. If you remove God, then you actually not only remove the true source of education, but also you often remove the motivation.
Mm-hmm.
So a child sometimes can get easily bored at school. Why do I have to learn all these facts and figures and these historical things and so forth? When they start to become born again and they start to become interested, sometimes they become more like a sponge, and they're like, they just can't get enough information. Look at Charlie Kirk.
That's true.
He didn't go to college, and yet he was.
Isn't that amazing?
Was wiser than most of the college professors out there.
By the time
he died, because he was like a sponge. He just kept wanting to learn. And remember at the funeral of Charlie Kirk, the memorial service, the president of Hillsdale College, Larry Arns, was talking about how Charlie was constantly, you know, signing up for our courses, and he was learning all about Aristotle and, you know, all these things that he kind of missed by not having a college education. But it's important to realize the Judeo-Christian tradition, it's not the only tradition, of course, that makes up the Western tradition and Western civilization, but it's the most important part of it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's important, though, to understand about the Greeks and the Romans and understand about history and the different aspects of history. But the fascinating thing is when you really start to study history from a biblical perspective, you realize, wow, God, who is sovereign, oversees all of this. And yeah. So the providential view of history makes much more sense than the secular one. I mean, even St. Augustine around 400 AD, in that zone, mm-hmm. He died 430. He basically said, oh, no, the Greeks were wrong when they said that history is circular. We see similar patterns over and over and over, but history is linear because it is, Jesus has come into history. Jesus, the Son of God, has actually changed all of history that was before Christ and after Christ, and history is moving toward its inexorable conclusion, which is the return of Christ. Yeah. So there's a big difference between a Christian worldview versus a secular one, and it is a Christian worldview that created the greatness of America. And not that all the founding fathers were Christians, but even the ones who were very influential, they had a Christian worldview.
Yeah, that's right.
And, for example, Ben Franklin called for prayer at the Constitutional Convention, and many historians say, well, that was kind of a breakthrough.
Yeah.
When they were essentially spinning their wheels.
Yeah. Well, today we've been talking with Dr. Jerry Newcomb, and Jerry wrote an article, Historical Icons They're Removing from Our Kids' Education. One of the paragraphs in your article, you note that the Marxists, now, if you want to get me upset, just call me a Marxist, because I consider that my enemy. So the Marxists continue their long march through the institutions in America, including our schools, in their attempt to separate us from the source of American greatness. Ultimately, that source is related to biblical Christianity. Now, Jerry, someone may want to look you up, read your materials. Please let our listener know where they can go.
ProvidenceForum.org. And one of the postings I have there is an interview Charlie Kirk did with me, and an interview a different one that I got to do with him.
Oh, that's really good. Well, good job. And hang in there, my brother Jerry. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Dan, for the opportunity.
What do we mean by constitutional rights? Riley M. Barnes, recently nominated to the position of Assistant Secretary of State, has said before a Senate committee that these rights are unalienable, in other words, inherent to us as human beings. He quoted the Declaration of Independence, noting that these rights ultimately come from God. The junior senator from Virginia objected, saying these rights come not from our Creator, but from our laws and government. But laws and governments change, as history demonstrates. Do our rights then change with them? Or are they, as has been recognized by our founders, God-given, and so unchanging? Today, Jerry Wiss considers this question as well as its answer. Jerry is a frequent contributor to Holding All Things Together and is a writer for Christian Renewal magazine.
Does it make a difference to believe that we are created by God? Well, consider the alternative. If we're uncreated, then we're the products of a random series of events that over time has somehow progressed to the point that human beings, in all their complexity, have evolved. We are then not generated from an outside creator, but generated through inside processes with no particular rhyme or reason, although each of us is clearly a product of rhyme and reason if we simply consider the complexity of human life. This way of thinking, then, results in believing that human beings alone, with no outside reference, have what it takes to perfectly determine what's right or wrong, what or who is to live or die, and how, and what is important versus what can be neglected. Do we have the equipment for this? Recently, Riley M. Barnes appeared before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee as the president's nominee for Assistant Secretary of State. He quoted Marco Rubio saying, "We are a nation founded on a powerful principle that all men are created equal because our rights come from God, our Creator, not from our laws, not from our governments." He added that we are made in the image of God with inherent dignity, something our founders also believed. Our rights are not created, changed, or formed to meet people's needs and desires, but are historic, natural rights we have to pursue life, liberty, and happiness. Barnes then added, if these rights are untethered from this core principle, then we make them mere sentiments, easily manipulated by authoritarians and bad actors. The junior senator from Virginia, Tim Kaine, reacted, saying that if our rights do not come from laws or government, but from a creator, that's something the Iranian government believes. And so he considered Barnes's statement troubling. Of course, Barnes was quoting from the Declaration of Independence, which Kaine, who holds a JD from Harvard, should have known. Kaine noted that he is a firm believer of natural rights, but said that these natural versus man-made rights are to be found in our laws and governments. Laws and governments, of course, change. Unalienable rights originating from the Creator do not. Kaine is concerned that any one of several religious traditions, although he seems to have Christianity in mind, would overshadow what we consider our constitutional rights. But the notion of unalienable rights originating with the Creator, who has created all men equal in his own image with inherent dignity, is a Christian doctrine. Can a government create unalienable rights? Don't governments and laws they create change? Well, governments and laws in Nazi Germany, Soviet Russia, or Mao's China certainly did not consider rights unalienable. In other words, inherently possessed by human beings, many of whom were not treated as human beings at all. To quote Roger Kimball in The New Criterion, the Constitution is not only a delineation of our government structure and an enumeration of its powers, it is also a bulwark against governmental overreach. Implicit in Tim Kaine's argument is a utopian faith in the beneficence, efficacy, and power, not of our Creator, but of unlimited government. President Gerald Ford has said, "A government big enough to give you everything you want is a government big enough to take from you everything you have." Senator Kaine's comments seem to echo Mr. Barnes's warning that if our notion of rights become untethered from the core principle of the Declaration of Independence, then our unalienable rights instead drift into mere sentiments, easily manipulated by authoritarians and bad actors. The central question has been and always will be, by what standard? The changing utopian views of man or the unchanging word of the living God?
Time once again for This Week in History. November 4th. He once said, "A fool and his money are soon elected." And, "I don't make jokes, I just watch the government and report the facts." Will Rogers is born this day in 1879. And, November 8th, 1923. The president of the Nazi Party launches the unsuccessful Wehrhahn Putsch, his first attempt to gain control of the German government. Adolf Hitler will be arrested 3 days later and given 5 years in prison. He serves only 9 months. While in prison, he writes Mein Kampf. That was This Week in History. Events as man recorded them, as God ordained them.
That's our program for this week. Thanks for joining us. Holding All Things Together is a production of Redeemer Broadcasting, and the views expressed are those of the participants. If you'd like to help us continue to produce this program and distribute it to others, please consider supporting us. Our mailing address for your tax-deductible gift is Redeemer Broadcasting, P.O. Box 1520, Olive Bridge, New York, 12461. You may also email us at ministry@redeemerbroadcasting.org. For Holding All Things Together, I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter.
God willing, see you next week.